The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of Reality Realty are not necessarily the views or opinions of Northumberland 89.7 FM. The information given is designed to be informative and helpful. You should always consult a professional when buying or selling your home. Hello, Northumberland County. This is Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's real estate talk show. I'm Dale Bryant, and I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage. And Reality Realty is your local real estate forum where we take on, we talk about, and we interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and the communities within it. A big thank you to our local Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage for sponsoring Reality Realty in a very tangible way, helping us to make this show possible. Joining us in a few minutes will be Megan Adams. Megan will be our guest this morning. Megan is a lawyer from Third Street Law, and we will be addressing some of the most frequently asked questions from buyers and sellers during the process of a real estate transaction. We will also look at a snapshot of our local real estate market and points to ponder. So let's get right down to business. Snapshot is a look at today's residential real estate market here in Northumberland County. Over the past month, we have had 65 residential listings sell. That's been fairly substantial increase over the past 5 weeks, where we had numbers like 41, 43, and 56. So we can see a small trend going up. This leaves us with an inventory here in our community of 282 residential listings for sale. And that also is a slight increase. So you might be wondering, what's the average price of residential real estate in our county? And what's the listing price and what's the selling price and how many days does it take to sell? Well, the average listing price of residential real estate that successfully sold over the past 12 months has been on average $313,000, and that's the listing price. These successful sales have sold for, on average, approximately $303,000. So on average, people are receiving approximately 97% of their asking price in a market time of 69 days. That's the average amount of days it takes to sell a residential home here in our county. So are we in a buyer's, seller's, or balanced market? Well, if we take a look, we are presently at a 23% absorption rate. So after 3 weeks of being in a balanced market, we are right back into a seller's market. And if last year is an indication of where we will be mostly, we will likely stay a seller's market here in our community. Each and every week, I research these Northumberland County statistics and calculate the absorption rate using the information from the realtor component of the MLS system. If you are thinking of buying or selling a home, you'll want this kind of information, but you'll want it more specific to the area within our county you're looking at, specific to the property type and the price band you're looking in. So what do? You talk to your local realtor. Your local realtor understands the Northumberland market information that's most relevant to you. Today's mortgage rates, they come to us from mortgage broker Carol Ann Bryant with the Broker Financial Group. And the best 5-year fixed is as low as 2.59%. And the 5-year variable is as low as 2.2%. And those are your best current rates. And that is a current snapshot of the residential market here in Northumberland County. Points to ponder. The points to ponder this week is really about something new that I'd like to introduce to Reality Realty, and it is a new Reality Realty survey. This is a great opportunity. If you're a listener, a regular listener, or if you only get a chance to listen once in a while, and you would like your voice to be heard, you'd like to participate in some way, I will be putting out a survey, a real estate survey, every week, and it'll be one question, maybe two questions. There's a couple more questions on the survey after that, but the real key of what is most interesting will be those first one or two questions. And every week after the survey, I'll report on your thoughts. And it will have something to do with our guest and topic. So when we have a guest and topic, the next week's survey will reflect what went on there. And the link to this survey will come through social media. I'll be posting it on Facebook. So if you look up Dale Bryant Real Estate Broker Facebook or Twitter, and I'll also have a method where I can email you the survey directly if you want to be on that list, email list of receiving that survey each and every week. Also, there'll be a section on the survey. The last question, I believe, is your comments on this show on Reality Realty. So if you would like to make a comment or be heard in the survey, I would certainly appreciate hearing from you. It certainly will make it more interesting, and we'll be able to gauge the feedback that you give us and compare it to some of the things we talked about on the previous show. So, points to ponder. Keep a lookout. That survey should be posted within the next day or two for this week, and we'll just keep that going, hopefully, thereafter. And that is my points to ponder today. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed by me, co-hosts, guests of the show, or any of the articles presented do not represent the views and opinions of the station, of the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors, of any real estate brokerage, or of any other realtor. They're simply our views and opinions at this time. Well, I'd like to introduce our guest this morning. We have live in the studio with us today, Megan Adams. Megan is a lawyer from Third Street Law in Coburg, and Megan specializes in real estate law. You may have heard Megan here on our show before because Megan is a repeat guest. I consider Megan one of our subject matter experts that are on our real estate panel, a great go-to person, a great person to work with. And Megan, welcome to the show again.
Thanks so much for having me again, Dale.
You're very welcome. It is certainly our pleasure. And I remember the last show. It was a great show. Had some good feedback from it. So I'm glad you could find some time in your busy schedule to be here again.
It's always fun to come chat with you.
Yeah. And it's not easy, is it, to find the time in this in a busy week, is it?
No, it's not. And it's been a busy winter.
Yeah, the real estate, actually, even though it has slowed down, I mean, speaking for me, even though it has slowed down a little bit in January and February, I'm surprised how much we're still doing compared to other years. Would the same go true for your office?
Absolutely. We're in a little bit of shock with the numbers we're getting in, so we're just working with them. And
you thought you might have a little time off, and you don't.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So, Megan, you grew up in Port Hope, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and so, interesting question as a realtor. What brought you back? You finish your schooling, your law schooling, and you're at a point in your life where really you can go many, many places. What was the draw to come back here to Northumberland County?
Ironically, a lot of it had to do with the real estate. I started in Toronto, had a husband, and we were looking, where can we raise our kids? We certainly can't raise them in a house in Toronto with our income. And before we even came back, we had our house bought and got ourselves a third of an acre and a small house here for a price, you know, we wouldn't even be looking maybe at a parking spot in Toronto for. So that was a big part of it. And just coming back, like-minded people, a lot of family and friends, and good feel in a small community.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting to hear because I work with a lot of out-of-town people, and it's easy for them to appreciate Coburg, Port Hope, the rural area, because they're not used to seeing it. And and they're often just amazed at how beautiful our community is. But if you grew up in it and you're used to seeing it every day, it can be a little more difficult to appreciate because it's just the norm, isn't it?
Until you stop and take a look around and see what we do have available to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Megan, 3rd Street Law Office, and that's on 3rd Street in right here in Colbert. Can you tell us a little bit about 3rd Street Law and what kind of law does your office practice?
3rd Street Law opened in October of 2013. We have three lawyers. We have our partners, Ann Logan and Stephanie Rudd, and they both practice predominantly in family law, but do other types of civil litigation as well. And I'm at the office in the role of the real estate lawyer, and I do wills and estates as well.
Okay. So it pretty much covers the gamut of what most people will run into.
And if we can't help you, we certainly have the names of local lawyers, if available, who can assist if we cannot.
Great. Well, I know a number of my clients have dealt with you and your law office and are always very happy. Megan, you shared with me recently a document that you put together with the help of people at your office, was it? Or was that on
Heather
your own?
Heather Purcell, our real estate law clerk, beginning of January, a little quieter, we decided to sit down and take a couple of days to put together a couple sheets to assist clients with questions that seem to come up in almost every transaction. Mm-hmm. So we can provide it to them, and before they need to come to us, they can take a look at that sheet just to give them an idea of how the process works, what their role is, what our role is. And some issues that they might find.
Yeah, well, and you were kind enough to share that those documents with me, basically frequently asked questions for buyers and sellers. And when I looked that over, I thought, oh, wow, this is great, because a number of these questions are the same ones that they're asking me, a realtor. And then I saw it, I looked at it, and I said, my goodness, that's a radio show right there. Megan has helped to create a radio show, and you were kind enough to come on and go over that. So let's just start to go over some of these questions and answers. Maybe I'll mention the question, and you can answer it, and we can elaborate on these as we go. So very informative stuff, folks. Some of it's very basic, but still, these are the questions being asked most often. And the first question here, Megan, I noticed it applies to both documents, the buyer and the seller transaction document. And the question is, how do I stay informed about my transaction?
Okay, so I'll get going. But before I do apologize in the sense that most of this, it's not the most titillating information or information that will be very exciting. But when it comes to your own transaction, you don't want an exciting transaction. You don't want something the realtors and lawyers remember. So we're just looking at how to keep your transaction simple, boring, and get it completed to the best of our abilities.
Well,
and
put.
how to stay informed. Read any correspondence you receive from your lawyer, from your realtor, from your mortgage broker, from your insurance broker. Read the information. See if you need to take anything back to those parties. Get information back to us as soon as possible. If you have questions, there's no dumb question. Call any of the people you're working with to get the information you need. We don't want to be sitting across from you 2 days before closing and have you raise a question and it be too late to address whatever that issue may be. So do not be afraid to email or call with that information, but please read everything you get, because again, it's not the most exciting stuff, but you're dealing with a huge transaction in your life, so take the time to sit down and read that information.
Yeah, and just be available too for your realtor to get in touch with you and lawyer to get in touch with you. And one of the things I'm curious about, Megan, here is, do people, some people possibly think that, you know what, the realtor put together the offer and helped to negotiate the best offer and got us all to sign, and it all got agreed upon. So that's great. Thank you, realtor, for doing that. Now, it's been handed over to the lawyers. Basically, it's just going to happen on its own.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
It's amazing that I feel some clients in other types of law harass their lawyers where I find I'm the one harassing the client. But the way to look at it is we've got the puzzle pieces hopefully in place, not always, most often not. But we have an agreement that hopefully is done well and we're dealing with a great realtor. Hopefully we have mortgage instructions put together by a wonderful broker and team. Hopefully we have insurance in place, but then we need to take those puzzle pieces and put them together. And to do so, we need all sorts of information, and it doesn't end.
Yeah, and it doesn't just happen on its own. And you won't, you know, it's not just that agreement got signed and you'll be given the keys and you'll have a fairy tale life ever after.
It sounds like you deal with the same issue then.
Yeah. So very important to keep the communication up and be available. Be available for your lawyers. This is a neat question here. And I highlighted this question because this is golden. Even though, like you said, maybe it's not titillating, but it's basic, but it matters. And the question is, what time, if I'm a seller, what time do I have to be out of my house?
And we're dealing with an electronic land title system now. It's a little bit different than it was 20 years ago. Everyone has a different idea of when they need to be out of the house if they're not informed. A lot of people think 6 p.m. because the agreement says we have until 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. to close the transaction. Not the case. As a seller, legally, you're to provide vacant possession at the time the transaction closes. The transaction can close anywhere between 9 a.m. and 4:59 p.m. So as a seller, the best piece of advice I can get is, if at all possible, get out of the house before closing, or do your best to get out as soon as possible on closing day.
Like, it'd be a great idea to get out the day before, wouldn't it?
When possible, take the steps so that you are mm-hmm. in a position to move wherever you're going the day before. Absolutely.
And that move is going to take longer than you think. I mean, it's so easy to get those initial boxes packed up and taped up, and you know, within 4 or 5 hours, you can say, wow, are we ever making great gains? But then you get into the garage, the things that don't pack nicely in a box, and the shed, and into the basement, and things that just don't pack nicely. And the amount of time that I see personally when I've made a move and hear other people talk about, the amount of time those little things take to get out of the house. Sometimes people find themselves not out on time, don't they?
And the big things as well. What we say with people buying and selling is just try to play nice in the sandbox. Legally, you may be the owner, but just the seller may not be out. Do your best. But at least once a month, when I represent a seller, we'll get a letter from the purchaser saying, we've closed, but the seller hasn't removed items. Just this past week, it was a hot tub, a tent trailer, a trampoline, and patio furniture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then we work with the buyer and the seller. Sometimes you may want to talk to your realtor if it looks like you're running into issues, to have the realtors talk between themselves to come to some sort of agreement and arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyers certainly can assist too, but I find sometimes as lawyers we muddy the waters mm-hmm. and we look at things from a legal perspective as opposed to a practical perspective. So legally that hot tub needs to be removed, but practically speaking, if it's not, what then?
And you have no choice but to speak from a legal perspective, don't you?
You hit the nail on the head. Yeah. We're always going to look at it worst case scenario. What can we do to protect our client as opposed to what can we do as a team to make it work for everyone?
And maybe, would it be fair, Megan, to say what can we do to protect ourselves as lawyers?
You hit the nail on the head as well.
Yeah, there's things mm-hmm. you just can't deny and you just have to say it the way it is. Now, the 4:59 up to 4:59... You know what? I know my personal experience. What's your personal experience of deals getting done right on that minute?
I have to put a shout out to local lawyers and local realtors. When we're dealing with local lawyers and realtors on both sides of the transaction, chances are we're looking pretty good for closing at a reasonable time.
Mm-hmm.
Bring in Toronto realtors, bring in Toronto lawyers, and we'll be lucky to close at 4:59. So
yeah.
is what we're finding. So in terms... If you're selling and you're selling at 4:59 p.m., that's great for time. But if you're planning on buying that same day, we're running into major issues and it's not uncommon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Things just aren't going to get done possibly that way. Well, Megan, we're already at our first break. You've been listening to Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. Join Megan and I after this break, and we will continue to talk about the most frequently asked questions by you, the general public, when you're buying and selling real estate. Welcome back. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM's Reality Realty with Dale Bryant. And my guest today is Megan Adams. Megan is a lawyer who specializes in real estate law in the Third Street Law Office. Megan, before the break, we just began talking about some of the most frequently asked questions that you run across as a lawyer in the lawyer office during a real estate transaction. We're looking first at some of the questions the sellers might be asking. Last question was, what time must I be out of the house? Next question here, Megan, that people are always asking is about their utility accounts and how do they close out their utility accounts?
It's the seller's obligation to contact their utilities to inform the utilities of the closing date and sort out any final billings. With respect to property taxes, if you're paying pre-authorized monthly taxes, call and cancel them. Pay your last payment and then call and cancel your property taxes and we'll sort out the rest. But other utilities, clients need to call themselves and ensure they've taken all steps to cancel their utilities.
Mm-hmm. And once again, this just doesn't happen on its own. We need to tell people that we are moving and we're not going to be using the utilities here anymore. Maybe people need to remember when they're thinking of utilities, remember that hot water tank rental. You might forget about that and somebody might be trying to charge you for a hot water tank rental that you're no longer using.
Hot water tank rentals, the companies, they won't be forgotten. They ensure that. So they'll do everything they can, should you not cancel, to ensure you pay up to and possibly after closing, should you not have called them in advance.
They'll find you.
Oh, they will.
They like to get their money, don't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about some of the costs that people should be aware of, Megan? You know, that people, they spend the money on the house. That's the big spend. Like we saw in Snapshot, average sale price over the past year, $303,000 in our community. So they've paid that big price, but there's other substantial costs that they add up, don't they?
They do. So when we're talking about the sellers, some things that I find... The legal fees in selling is, there's not too many surprises. There's the lawyer's fee and very minor disbursements plus HST. Sellers are sometimes surprised with, about half of our sellers aren't aware that, not yours, Dale, but many, yeah, that on real estate commission, on top of the percentage you've agreed upon with your real estate agent is HST. And so on that price point, it is quite substantial. So that comes as a shock to about half of our clients.
And that's something relatively new. I'm just trying to think about how old that is. But something's telling me something like 6, 7, 8 years ago, maybe that got implemented.
2009, it was HST. It? I'm assuming before that it was just PST. So it was still a hit, yeah, but not the 13%. So that's another thing. But even more so, I dread when a client has sold a house with a mortgage and I say, have you determined your prepayment penalty for breaking any mortgage? And a client saying no. When you have a fixed closed mortgage, the price point, the point when we get our statement in from the bank, we'll order a discharge statement. When it's over a $4,000 penalty, that's sort of the point where I make sure to call the client personally and say, heads up, were you aware of this penalty? $4,000 is uncomfortable. Generally, clients find a way to make it work. But we're talking sometimes $10,000 or more. And if a client's not making much on their sale, they may be looking to bring us in money. Not my own. My client was buying this property, but the biggest discharge penalty I ever saw, and obviously this is a little dramatic, was $40,000 to break the mortgage. So it's a huge mortgage. They broke it quite early on in the process. But before a person looks to sell, and I know, Dale, you speak with your clients, just figure out what that prepayment penalty is to determine whether maybe it's not the time to sell.
Yeah, that, you know, you you have a number of 40,000. I'm curious what Carol Ann, my wife, mortgage broker, would what she's experienced as a big, you know, biggest penalty.
That was a unique one.
Yeah, that sounds like that'll be a tough record to beat for sure.
And when clients sell, sometimes if they're selling an estate sale, so a survivorship application has to be registered. Mm-hmm. On sales, what else might be registered? Sometimes there's old restrictive covenants or old things on title that have expired, and mm-hmm. so the purchaser requires us to discharge them. We don't charge an additional fee to do that, but there is the registration cost to the government of about $80. So there's little fees here or there on sales that can come up. Worst case scenario, your property has massive legal issues, and whether you're paying surveyors to come in, increased legal fees, this type of monstrous issue that comes up on occasion, but I mean, we're talking very rare that I've had to assist clients in horrendous issues like that on sales.
Mm-hmm. But if you're running a very tight budget and your transaction, you know, you're counting dollars, pennies, then these extra fees, if you haven't been made aware of them, that could be a shortfall on closing. And what happens then, Megan, when there just isn't the money?
Just once in my career have I seen a case where the shortfall was so big, the seller couldn't afford to sell and the transaction fell through. So that's mm-hmm. worst case scenario. So if you're the purchaser, hopefully you catch wind of that soon enough. But that's the absolute worst situation. It's unfortunate. Between separations and houses having to be sold, job losses, unexpected deaths, it puts people in a very difficult position. And I know lawyers and realtors will certainly do our best to work with clients to make sure things get taken care of, but those banks are going to collect their penalties no matter what.
For sure. And really and truly, I guess what I'm thinking is that aspect of that awareness, even though we do handle it somewhat and we try to help make people aware of it, I mean, the buck stops in your court because that's where it happens or not.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking the lenders, either your banks or your mortgage broker or your mortgage agent, I mean, that's the financial talk there. You would think that's where that would happen the most.
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah. And like you say, at your point, be a very boring issue, non-issue, because it's all been taken care of. No surprises.
That's what we hope.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting one, and here's one we have in our community quite a bit. Well, I mean, some communities will have this, but talking about oil, talking about propane heating, oil heating, propane heating, and well and septic. I mean, that's a rural thing, and typically the propane's a rural issue as well. And even the oil nowadays is more of a rural thing than. So what would you tell people about these issues?
For the seller or the buyer?
For the seller, yeah.
For the seller. It's not in the agreement of purchase and sale, but common practice in our area is if you have an oil or propane tank, get it filled as close to closing as possible. And then what happens is on closing, on the statement of adjustments, you'll be credited back the full tank of oil or full tank of propane at whatever the rate is at closing. And as to the well or septic, look to your agreement of purchase and sale. Are you obligated to provide some water testing samples to the purchaser? Are you required to empty your septic? And I have a question for you, Dale, about septic. More often than not, agreements purchase sale state that the seller will empty the septic tank on closing. What happens this time of year when the ground's frozen? Does that affect things, or if there's 10 feet of snow or the ice storm, or is the septic tank, can it be emptied at any time of year?
And I definitely have seen us have that condition in an agreement of purchase and sale in the wintertime, and it get done. Now, I've never had it that they weren't able to get that foot and a half of soil off of the lid. But I mean, that's a great question.
That's what us lawyers muddy the waters. If there's a 1 in 1,000 chance you could have a problem, we're going to point it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would think that if the ground was frozen so solidly you couldn't get it, there would have to be some amendment to that agreement of purchase and sale that both sides agree on, saying that the seller would pay for it, you know, as soon as it could possibly get done. I would imagine that's what would have to happen. And you likely don't want to make a comment on that because who knows how that would work out.
And I understand why the clause is put in there. It's in there for a certain reason, and that's great. We don't have any issue with it. I always often just wondered, what if?
Yeah, and I haven't run across a scenario yet where it couldn't be done. And maybe that's just great luck and timing. Interesting. Every now and again, these things come up that rarely come up. And it makes you think, for sure. So what about people asking about what their obligations are, Megan, in selling a condominium as opposed to a single detached home?
We have quite a few condominiums in Northumberland County nowadays. Unfortunately, most of them are managed by a fantastic property manager who takes care of things. When a person buys and they order the status certificate, most information is laid out in the status certificate and any potential issues come out then. But when you're selling, ensure your common expenses are paid up to date, up to the month of closing. And if you become aware of anything unique, whether a special assessment's been contemplated or you receive any mail from your board of directors, then notify your lawyer immediately as it may need to come to the purchaser's attention.
So very, very similar to regular single family detached home. It's just whatever the obligations were that you've been handling as a homeowner or condo owner, you need to handle those right up until the day of close.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Property taxes. We got a question here on your document, Megan. When do I cancel my property taxes?
Property taxes is always a dance, and it's hard to articulate what happens with property taxes. But the seller is legally obligated to pay property taxes up to the latest installment before closing. So if you're closing February 28th and you have property taxes due February 26th, you pay those. You may work with your lawyer. Your lawyer may pay them from the proceeds of the sale. When you've been paying monthly, it creates some confusion. But then what happens on the statement of adjustments is the lawyers look to see that person up the seller pays taxes per diem from January 1st, the date of closing. So either the seller will be credited on the statement of adjustments or the purchaser will be, just to balance it. And this is another thing to budget for. One came across my desk this morning, closing, I think, February 26th, same day as tax installment comes due. My purchaser needs to find an additional $900 to pay back the vendor because the vendor will have paid property taxes that flows longer than they own the property.
Yeah, so they have to come up with that money on that day. It's not like they're out of pocket anything extra because over the course of the next few months, their taxes are now paid.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So then they're living free for a couple of months, but they need to find it at the time they least likely can.
Yes, a pretty inconvenient time possibly had they not have already been predicting that this would happen. Okay, here's another one, and it ties in a little bit to an earlier question we had. One of our first questions was, what time must I be out of my house? Here's a question here. Is there a possibility closing does not happen on the closing date?
And this is what keeps me up at night, and I assure you, if there's anything in my power ever on a closing date that will ensure closing will happen, I will do it. And I hope I'm working with a team of realtors and mortgage brokers who feel the same way. Mm-hmm. That being said, there's a lot out of the lawyer's hand. There's a lot out of your team's hand. We're also dealing with the purchaser and the purchaser's lawyer. Closing may not happen on the closing date. It may be delayed a day or more. It's a dance, but generally speaking, it does carry over to the next business day, and whoever's fault it is the transaction hasn't closed legally needs to bear the cost to the innocent party. So if you're selling and, well, what would your cost be? Well, if you're unable to buy because you didn't sell, then you're on the hook to your buyer, who's on the hook to their seller, buyer, seller, and this chain could go on forevermore, and you could be responsible for anything. So this is what keeps this up, which is why, is it possible closing does not happen on closing? Absolutely. Not often, but it certainly does. So if you're planning on buying the same day as selling, please consider bridge financing with your mortgage broker or your lender, because it will save me some sleepless nights and my clients even more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just It just makes the whole, even if everything goes well, there's so much less stress.
Logistical nightmare, I say. Yeah. Even when someone buys and sells the same day and everything goes as smoothly as it can in my eyes, it's still a logistical nightmare for those clients.
Well, it is. It's a nightmare day, that's for sure. And I've done it. I've done it in the past and will never do
you
that.
You know better. I bought my first home in 2009. I will never move.
Yeah. Get it right. If you have to make a move, get it right.
I suppose that won't be good for our businesses, but...
Well, no, but you know what? If you don't have to move, don't move, really and truly. And so the closing date, yes. And, you know, you're wondering, we talk about whoever's fault it is. Now,
fault's the bat. It's a terrible word.
Well, yeah, wherever...
Where does the buck stop?
Yeah, where was there a break in the chain or whatever, but... Being married to a mortgage broker, right? I do know that, you know, you talk about sleepless nights, you know, when Carol Ann is working with lenders and she's getting everything in she needs, she's fulfilling all the requirements that the lenders are asking for. And then all of a sudden, 11th hour, a bank, a credit union, a broker-only lender, you know, one of these lenders all of a sudden realize that they didn't do this yet, or this wasn't fulfilled, even though they gave no indication earlier. Does the chain break a little extra in the financing segment of this deal than anything else?
I would say absolutely. And Carol Ann and I spoke about this recently, between government legislated requirements of the lenders, but there's lenders facilitators, there's innocent purchasers who go out and spend a bunch of money on a credit card because they want new.
They haven't been counseled, right?
By Carol Ann.
Mm-hmm. She counsels them.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, but if they haven't been counseled
and
properly.
And it's things we don't think about. So it's often at the lending, especially the busy summer months. If you cannot close on the last Friday in July, don't. It's just not a great day.
No, and you know what? I typically, Megan, like not to close on a Friday at all. I like to pick a different day of the week with my buyers. Is that a good policy?
It's a fantastic policy for two reasons. Number one, less likely busy closing day, so you have more attention from the lawyers, from the banks, from all the parties involved. Number two, if your transaction doesn't close on a Tuesday, hopefully Wednesday morning we brush off and close early in the morning. If you don't close on a Friday and it's a long weekend, you're looking at three sad days.
Yes, exactly, because it's only next business day that it can close. Yeah. All right, one more question here we have for sellers. and basically it's, what is the role as a seller? What is my role if I'm a seller?
I'm just taking a look at this. It's very similar to the role as a purchaser. But again, just like you pointed out at the beginning, be available. Be available to your realtor, your lawyer, your lender, and get them all the information they need in a timely fashion. ID sounds ridiculous, but we need two valid pieces of ID, especially when it comes to purchasing, which we'll talk about. Make sure you have those pieces of ID in place well before closing. Be available to sign documents the week of closing. Don't be too busy. Don't be on a cruise. Make sure you close around a time you are around. And look at your agreement of purchase and sale. What are your obligations? Are you to do repairs? Are you to empty that septic tank? Make sure you take on that quarterback role and ensure these things are completed in the time frame allowed within the agreement of purchase and sale. Provide to your realtor, who will forward it to the purchaser's realtor, and then they may come to us for if there's any issues, or just to ensure we have our file
papered. Exactly. You know, I think take the bull by the horns. Do these things, even though you may have, say, 10 business days. Do them in day one. Mm-hmm. Do them in day two. Don't wait till the 10th business day, because sometimes things go wrong, and you need that extra time. Well, that's a great wrap-up on the different frequently asked questions, Megan, that sellers have and that you, in your office, you experience every week, if not even every day. And we're going to take a small break. And after this break, we're going to start to talk about the frequently asked questions that are most heard from buyers. So you've been listening to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, Join us again in just a few minutes. Welcome back. This is your Real Estate Forum, Northumberland, 89.7 FM's Reality Realty with Dale Bryant. And my guest today is Megan Adams. Megan is a lawyer from Third Street Law right here in Coburg. And Megan specializes in real estate law. Megan, before the break, we finished up the most frequently asked questions by sellers in a real estate transaction. We're going to do a little shift now to buyers, and a number of them are the same. So the first question that you have here on your FAQ document that you hand out to clients, one of the first questions here is, should I schedule my move on the day, on the closing day?
If at all possible, we always recommend our clients not to move on the day of closing when they're purchasing, for two reasons. Number one, when a moving truck is packed and ready to go at 12 and we're not ready to close until 5, it's not nice to be paying a moving truck an hourly company for those 5 hours. Number two, doomsday provision. What if for some reason something happens and it doesn't close on closing?
Mm-hmm.
Not only were you planning on moving in, but you might not have a place to stay that night. So you're looking at, you know, we've seen couples with 3 kids and 4 dogs looking to stay in a hotel. And I don't know what happens with stuff. It stays in the moving truck. So these become issues. So again, if
at
all possible.
And you pay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you do. So if you're a first-time home buyer, if you have a rental property, you may consider buying a couple days before your rent's up, or even better, a couple of weeks before your rent's up, to give you a more civilized move and insure against any potential issues on closing.
And you talked about the bridge financing before, Megan. You know, even a day or two can relieve so much stress. I personally, on my next move, I'll be looking for bridging for a week or two, because you want to get in there and clean up your new place. And it's so much easier to clean up without all your stuff in it and just make the move a little less stressful. And still, if you give yourself 2 weeks, you'll find yourself having a very busy 2 weeks. And if you don't give yourself 2 weeks, you'll be cramming that very busy 2 weeks into one day.
And my understanding is it's quite economical to do bridging. You might just be looking at a couple hundred of dollars for that peace of mind.
Yeah, and percentage-wise, you know, we talk about percent rates and what percent are you being charged. Percentage-wise, it's a big dollar. But like you say, when you just look at the bottom line and what's the actual dollar value, it is money well spent for sure. Next question on this document, Megan, is how are my utilities arranged?
Just like when you sell, when you buy, it's your obligation to notify utilities that you're becoming the owner. We do have phone number sheets for Port Hope and Coburg, but your realtor might be a better place to go to receive a list of who your utilities are. Contact them within a couple of weeks of closing and get set up on their systems. One tidbit of information I do give clients is if they're looking for a deposit because you haven't been a client before, ask if there's any way around that. Often if they have your credit score, mm-hmm. they will waive that, and likely your mortgage broker has your credit score and you can fax that off to save yourself that few hundred dollars additional money at that front end.
Interesting. I didn't realize that was an option there.
Sometimes it seems to be.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a really neat thing to know. And so, yeah, folks, you are responsible. Your lawyer isn't going to, and your realtor isn't going to personally set up your new utilities for you.
And it's not common knowledge, so I'm not going to name any names here, but a lawyer in our office purchased her first home locally here and failed to notify the gas company. Her gas was shut off, which was unfortunate because I think her closing happened between maybe Christmas and New Year's. So yeah. She had no gas for a few days in her place. So it happens.
Yes, it happens because there's so much to think about.
Mm-hmm.
It is so convoluted. There's so many aspects to consider when you're making a move that without something like you've created here, without a good checklist, mm-hmm. it can be easy to overlook something. And then that could be interesting dynamics within the family.
And well, you say,
you know, Carol Ann, you did that, right? No, Dale, you said you were going to do that.
And we always remind our clients when they come in to see us. And the most catastrophic I've seen recently, it was just in one of the articles I read, cottage property property closed. People forgot to get their utilities set up and pipes burst, and there goes their cottage. Oh, that's
a bad start.
And they don't notice till months later.
Yeah, that's dreadful. Mm-hmm. All right. What about this question here, Megan? When will I know how much money I need to bring to the lawyer office before closing, and how is this money payable?
And we should slow down here because this is one of, understandably, the biggest question purchasers have. But the unfortunate thing is we tend not to know until a few days before closing. As the purchaser's lawyer, we have to wait to receive from the seller's lawyer the statement of adjustments that tells us how much we're paying the seller on closing. We also have to wait to get mortgage instructions to see how much our client is getting in, which often is a week before closing or even mm-hmm. sooner. So as soon as we know, you will know. Hopefully you've done the math and you've got a sense of what you're going to need to bring in. We know it's scary and unpredictable, but as soon as we know, you will know. And the monies is a certified check or bank draft payable to Third Street Law. Very important, as you know, Dale, and what you mm-hmm. do. A lot of fraud going on, and so we can only take what we can take, and it has to be a bank draft or certified check, which will be payable to your lawyer. And it will be one check, so that will include sort of your down payment, mm-hmm. legal fees, disbursements, land transfer tax. It's all just in that one check there. And before closing, we'll send you a few pages which explains how we came to our number.
Right, and those numbers that you won't get until just a few days before, like you say, they can be anticipated. Your lender can anticipate how much you'll owe in a penalty or whatever based on where you're at today and how that will project over the next few weeks. So, yeah, it's not a total surprise.
Well, and I will never estimate for a client, because anytime I have, I've mm-hmm. gotten myself in big trouble. So again, yeah. Our real estate law clerk, Heather, I've had to promise that I will not provide any sort of estimate, because there's always something that I didn't think of or something that comes up last minute that gets me in the hot seat.
Yeah, and absolutely. And even I know with Carol Ann, she doesn't want to start estimating penalties from the lender to break a mortgage or whatever. She wants that straight from the lender, and then she will pass that on to the client. So yeah, it's there is money that typically can be due on the closing date. Now, you've mentioned a few times statement of adjustment so far, Megan. What exactly is the statement of adjustment?
So what the statement of adjustment is parties have agreed on a purchase price, but in addition to the purchase price, there may be some give or take. So we have our purchase price that comes due on closing, but a purchaser's made a deposit. So obviously that gets taken off of that purchase price. So this starts our ledger of a statement of adjustment price. So there's purchase price, less deposit, and then there'll be that tax adjustment we've talked about. So property taxes will be adjusted so that just as fair. So there's an adjustment for taxes. But then comes along oil or propane. We're talking maybe $1,000 or more. If you're buying and you have oil or propane, you're paying for a full tank of oil or propane. We may be looking at rentals, propane tank rentals, all sorts of fun stuff adjusted. We won't even get into new builds. That's just a mm-hmm. whole new kettle of fish. But the statement of adjustment at the end of the day tells us where we started. And at the end of the day, how much does the purchaser need to give the seller on closing?
And so everything's going to be worked out and it's going to be fair. And generally speaking, the day of close, mm-hmm. who's paying for that? The seller or the buyer? Who's responsible for day of close?
Oh, we have that dance every time it matters. I argue it depends. I don't recall. I believe it's the purchaser pays for the day of closing, although mm-hmm. I think Heather and I have had this debate recently, and she thinks it's the purchaser. But I do know we have property taxes due on the day of closing on a transaction in February, and it's the seller. I'm gonna go with the seller yeah. today, but it depends on when I'm looking at it.
Yeah, okay. Now, property taxes. The next question is about, next thing you have here is about property taxes after closing.
And this came up, Carol Ann and I spoke recently about this as well. So so property taxes after closing as the purchaser, go to the town and get yourself set up on taxes. Preferably monthly. It's much nicer than the shock of getting it quarterly. But about half of our clients, their lender pays their property taxes. So a portion of your mortgage payment goes to the lender, and they pay your property taxes. But there's a lot of miscommunication. And when I sit down with clients, I do my best, although not always perfect, to determine who's responsible for property taxes and when. Because quite often this time of year, you might buy, you pay your property taxes to your lender, but somewhere in the fine print it says you're responsible for taxes until 2017. So while your money comes off immediately to the lender, they like to build their pot just in case something happens. So you feel like you're paying twofold. So when possible, pay yourself. But you just need to know, because I know I had a client, and I know Carol Ann had a client call her just recently to say, I've been hit with a tax arrear bill. I thought my lender was paying. And the reason being, you need to look at that fine print to figure out when do you start paying. You need to sort that out with your mortgage broker. And that's the best place to start.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Pay your taxes separately. It might seem like a very handy thing to have your lender pay the taxes, but if at all possible, I too would recommend paying.
They love that pot. We have you get it back at the end of the day. But I have a client who bought a year ago. He's selling next week, so he's owned the property a year. Lender was paying taxes in that year. They've overcollected, I think, about $1,600. So he'll be getting that back. But you want your money in your pocket, especially when you've just bought a new home.
Now, here's two questions. We'll put the two questions into one here, and they're very similar from what we talked about as a seller. This is looking at things as a buyer. And the two questions together, Megan, is there a possibility the closing date doesn't happen on closing, and when will I get my keys?
We know the answer is that possible closing doesn't happen on closing.
Yeah.
We know, yes, it might not happen, and we deal with that doomsday provision or Armageddon provision at the time it happens. When will I get my keys? I have no idea. As a purchaser, I walk into my office on purchaser's lawyer on closing date. I need to wait for mortgage monies to come into our account. We wire the monies to the seller's lawyer. The seller's lawyer must sign off the deed electronically, make sure we have keys. We need to review our files, sign the deed, and then we'll call you to tell you you can pick up your keys. Generally, it happens in the afternoon, but once again, it can happen anywhere between 9 and 5. And as to where you pick up your keys, generally, it's from your lawyer's office.
So typically, what time would your office close?
We close at 5, but we accommodate. But generally, the way we accommodate is if it's a Friday, I'm not sticking around, so I might call your realtor and say, hey, can you come get the keys and sort it out with your client?
Yes. Been down that road before, too.
So we appreciate having realtors who are very invested in the process like you, Dale.
Well, thank you. You're buttering me up for the next time you do that. So what is my role as a purchaser, Megan?
Keep yourself informed about the process before you even start putting in offers. Meet with realtors, meet with mortgage brokers, get yourself a fantastic team you're comfortable with and work well with. Quarterback your own transaction. If you don't have answers, ask. Again, be available, get information to a timely fashion to all parties. If your lender's not getting back to you or your mortgage broker to sign documents, we need mortgage instructions from your lender, and only then can we really start your file. So if 2 weeks before closing you haven't heard much, start hounding your mortgage broker or lender to get in to sign everything, and that's when you might hear what you need to get to them. Get them all the information you need as soon as possible. Give yourself long enough closing that we have time to do what we need to do, and it's just not a sloppy mess. Again, ID. ID trips people up. Some lenders require crazy ID, so make sure you have the ID available. Get your property insurance arranged. Lender requires insurance on closing. You need insurance on closing. It could lead to a delay if you don't have it. Be available to sign your documents. And if your agreement of purchase and sale has it written in to attend the property for a final viewing, get there the day or two before closing. If you see any major issues, as a client mentioned offhand, I think a bathroom ceiling had collapsed recently. So they thought that was okay, but I don't think that's okay. And then the lawyer may need to get involved in dealing with potential issues before closing, especially winter.
Absolutely.
Anything can happen.
Have that built right into your agreement of purchase and sale, that you get that final viewing. Well, Megan, it's the end of a show. It's the end of a whole hour.
Fun as always, Dale.
Megan, how can people get in touch with you? If they'd like more information about your services or any of these questions, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way is probably by telephone, 905-372-3773, and you'll hear from Jessie, our receptionist. And if you want to speak with me directly, let her know. My email address is m.adams@thirdstreetlaw.ca, and I do love talking real estate, whether it's with you, Dale, or potential clients, so...
Perfect.
Look forward to some calls.
Well, folks, if you have any questions or comments about today's show or pertaining to any real estate, feel free to contact me, Dale Bryant, by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca or call into the radio station at 905-372-2391 and leave a message. Don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant. I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage next Thursday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week, folks.